latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The 145th Kentucky Derby is in the books, and it was a wild one. Now it's off to Baltimore for the second leg of the Triple Crown. Can Country House rebound in 2 weeks with another solid performance, or will a new face smile at Pimlico? See what the experts have to say in ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide. That's right, the guide is free to everyone and available online at ExpressBet.com. Inside the guide, you'll find expert selections, analysis, and suggested $100 wagering strategies from some of the game's sharpest handicappers, writers, and broadcasters. Don't plunk down your hard-earned bread until you've read what these guys have to say. Also, ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide provides you with important stats and trends you won't find anywhere else. Visit ExpressBet.com to access the free Preakness Wager Guide beginning Friday, May 10th, and an updated version that includes Eddie Olchek's picks May 16th. Open a new ExpressBet account and get up to a $500 welcome bonus. Visit the website for complete details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet, and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com, using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, and I let that play because I happen to love this. and actually, Jay Pribman was Jay hung actually for a little bit longer after we got off the air there, and I'm glad Jay wrapped up because he was getting me, you know, I'll get misty here. I'm always susceptible. I don't know if I'm at the level of the Jerkins family, which are, you know, which are famous criers, but I also am glad I kind of went brief, as I said this morning, that I if I aired, I aired on the side of brevity yesterday. There's Rick Hammerly. Hammer, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you? This fine sunny day. Sunny here, sunny there.
Pretty much. I mean, it's not bright, but it's bright outside. It's not sunny, but it's certainly beats the alternative and what was some concern. We've got the first in memory, the first 2 days of dry black-eyed Susan Preakness, I think, that anybody can recall.
Well, that's good. That's a good start. And I'll jump on the bandwagon, too, before we get too far. Congratulate you on yesterday's award. You know, as you've heard since it's been announced, well-deserved. And glad to be able to talk to you every week because you're the best. You sure are. And so, anyway, well-deserved, as you know. And I'm sure you've got a lot of slaps on the back, and they're all well-meant. Believe me, you do a great job. And, you know, you had Jay on, and he sent out the little tweet yesterday with the old hashtag BIC, not bike. You know, B-I-C-K, not B-I-K-E. And I was early this morning back here, early in the morning, and I kind of hazed through it and read a couple of the comments, and someone said, what's with that hashtag? And went on to explain that they it, you know what? Pretty tough. It's three letters. I guess you go one way or the other, but you think you'd ask. But anyway, so I immediately thought, I gotta do something with this. This is good. And I had a couple that probably weren't as tasteful, but I sent out I picked for the Rolling Stones, but the tagline said Mick, not Mike.
Oh, that's and, okay. Nice. I like that.
So there was a couple others in there that you could. I went down the outfit. I'm going, let's see, sick not psych, dick not done. I go, you know what, Nick not Mike's kind of clean. So
That's good.
Sent that. Then when I sent back to Jay, I answered it. I answered with it's Rick not Reich. Anyway, when you after your announcement there about the Pimlico, I said, you know, when you run for mayor of Baltimore, that can be your tagline, right? Nick not Mike. Let's go.
Get on your bike and ride. There's a lot of
few things. You can go think. But anyway, I what's in a name? But you do a great job, and I really appreciate by a lot of people out there that have told me to say something. So we'll get that. But so don't we like they do in the sports world, and you're introduced as the Hall of Famer. Terry Bradshaw, do we go with, Hilltopper, Steve Vick for a while anyway? I think that's
good. All right. Uh-huh. Well, I tell you what, that makes me think of, that's what we used to call John Asher, who went to Western Kentucky, the old Hilltopper.
Anyway, throwing some
John
stuff out there for you, that mayoral run there at
Thank
Baltimore.
You.
I know there's a slot at the top, but you'd be good for that. But so Maryland, it's Maryland's time for center stage, and I'm glad the weather's cooperating, and they get their usual complement of stakes. I think there's 16 stakes run on the 2 days, which is good. Not a ton of star quality, but a lot of competitive type races. And that's good. And he touched on it with Jay. And it's tough to grind through these races. But just speeding over them a little bit, the lack of participation from California, as it was on Derby weekend, I think it's rather telling. It was sprinkled. We had a few horses sprinkled in Derby weekend, but here are not many at all. If any, in these in the prep races, I mean not the prep races, the pre races, you have the Pimlico, the Preakness itself, but I think it's just rather telling of the situation out here. It is getting a little better, which is not hard to do, to tell you the truth. Stabilizing 3 days a week, and it unless something changes, I guess that's the way it's going to finish up. And the entries have picked up a little bit. They're, like I said last week, they're very still very lucky to have Dan Etzen here, who's picked up the slack and is writing the books for the last to get things to the finish line. But at least it should be 3 days of competitive racing, I think, from here on out. So that's an improvement. And I guess when the meet ends in late June, there'll be a little, hopefully, there'll be a little kind of a meeting and some kind of need to restore some confidence, obviously, in the horsemen that have sent some horses elsewhere or thinking of horses to send elsewhere and just kind of still not knowing what the long-range plan is. So hopefully when the meet is over here, there will be a little huddle up and then some kind of a, like I said, a confidence-building speech or something given to you know, let people know that, hey, we're still live out here and this is what we're doing. So that's all we can, that's all you can hope for the future. I wanted to mention one thing where I forgot in my many little things spread out on the counter here. Two-year-old racing's coming back. They finally got together and you know, the pole plan that we had going in before I got lost was to start the two-year-olds a little bit later in the year and give them a chance. Because, you know, you hate to, it used to be a race all of a sudden. You know, let's get them out there. Oh, good, we got six horses. We made a race. That's great. So get the horses back and get them a couple more weeks to train, and it's worked. So there's some two-year-old racing. But what I wanted to mention, there's a name that you're going to see throughout, and not just here at Santa Anita, but throughout the year in the two-year-old races as a trainer, and that's Luis Mendez. And he works for the John Brocklebank operation, and they operate out of St. George, Utah. And you'll see he's got one in on I think it's today, Cal's Gym. You'll see some DXDs in the PPs where the horses have been working. That's Dixie Downs. It's a full on racetrack training center. John used to run under his name. Now they run under Luis Mendez's name, who's been with the operation. And let me tell you, they come, that's what they do. They run two-year-olds. Every horse that they have on the track is fit, ready to run, will run good, and it's for sale. So that's what they do. So when you see his name out there, just, you know, you're going to shake your head and go, I don't know who this guy is. The horses are ready to fire. And so the works are recorded. And back when I started out, we used to have this thing out here in California. They would call them Utah Maidens. And what they would do is they would train in Utah, and they'd be running in races out there. There were no recorded. There was no works. There was nothing. And they would show up here. A couple guys would bring them in. And, you know, they would run like they're three-year-olds and run through the TV and pay, you know, $10, $15, $20. And, you know, do a little research. You found out they're, you know, they're called, quote, Utah Maidens. So now that it's a registered place, so when you see the DXD there, you might see a few more. Don't be you know, drawn off by it. Just think of it as a good place where to go. But the Luis Mendez name, I just wanted to mention, you'll see him in most of the training races, and comes from a real good operation. It's not really a big secret around these parts, so maybe the prices aren't great, but when you see one every once in a while, just know. So I wanted to get that little bit in as we start the three-year-old or two-year-old play here now, and you'll see them start to come out. And as we get closer to Del Mar, obviously more and more of them will. So that's the front out here. And I was doing a little because the race, the Preakness is not, you know, does not have the star power yet. I started looking at some crazy stuff last night. And, you know, once you get going, you get going. And I started to compare Preakness winners to Kentucky Derby winners. And I went 25 years back. And I'll tell you what, surprisingly enough, if you go back 25 years and you take the Derby winner versus the Preakness winner, and you look at their career from that point onward, I mean, it's not even close that the Preakness is more of a sign of future greatness than the Derby. And I tell you, like I said, it's not even close. So you've had 25 Preaknesses, 11 of them were won by the same horse. So we throw that out. That leaves at least 14 other races to look at, of horses to compare. And now to me, I went through them, and if there wasn't anything that really jumped out on either side, I called it equal. And so, I mean, the horses that I called equal were Always Dreaming and Cloud Computing. I don't think either one won a race after the Derby, so that's a wash. Orb and Oxbow, I don't think either one of them won a race after their Derby and Preakness. That's a wash. Animal Kingdom and Shackleford, a little tough. Animal Kingdom, of course, won the Dubai World Cup. Shackleford won the Met Mile and other races. I called that a wash. Giacomo and a Fleet Alex. Fleet Alex did go on to win the Belmont, but that was kind of a wash. And like Foo Peg and Red Bullet, kind of a wash. And so if you call those washes, that leaves 9 extra races. And to me, of the 9 more, the Preakness winners are 8 of the Preakness winners went on to have a better career than those Derby winners. And I'm going to really quick run by them. Exaggerator over Nyquist, Exaggerator winning the Preakness. Yep. You've got Looking at Lucky versus Super Saver. Of course, Looking at Lucky, yep, I think was a better career afterwards. Then you have Rachel Alexander versus Mind That Bird. Not even close. You got Curlin versus Street Sense. Curlin went on and had a much better career. You got Bernardini versus Barbaro. Obviously, Bernardini went on and did better. You got Point Given versus Monarcos. I don't think Monarcos won a race after the Derby. You've got Louis Quatorze versus Grindstone. Grindstone didn't run again, so Louis Quatorze went on and had a better career. And you got Tabasco Cat versus Gopher Gin. Tabasco Cat went on and had a better career. The only horse that in that run, I think, that where the Derby winner went on better was Thunder Gulch versus Timber Country. And so when you think about the Preakness, you usually kind of think of it as like a blah race, like, okay, let's see who wins the Preakness and then move on to the Belmont. But it really was pretty amazing what all those horses versus the Derby winners in that year, how much better they turned out. So kind of wild.
That's an interesting exercise, and of course, you know, there's a few of those that you can put the, you know, the proviso, the asterisk, you know, particularly Looking at Lucky, where you say, I mean, let's be honest, if Looking at Lucky's got an equitable post, he probably was, you know, the horse that if they ran the Derby 100 times, he, you know, from various posts,
right,
he probably would have won the most. And, you know, the wet track, the one thing that jumps out, and of course we were talking about this extensively last year, Hammer, was the lack of follow-up success of wet track Derby winners. There had been, you know, going in, that's what everybody was hanging their hat on if they were against Justify, was the wet track performance. And they were using Orb and Super Saver, et cetera, and you know, as their examples. You know, in yeah. the Mind That Bird is a funny case, because if Rachel, there's a couple of things about that are fascinating. I mean, first is that if Dolph Morrison had let Hal Wiggins run her in the Derby, she probably wins.
Right.
And so that's a proviso. But at the same time, if Jess Jackson doesn't buy the filly and run her back 2 weeks later, Mind That Bird goes to Belmont with a chance at a Triple Crown. And people forget how well he ran here behind Rachel, and he actually ran well at Belmont. If unfortunately Calvin Burrell, you know, chose not to take a mount at Belmont and sort of get a better feel for the oval. But Mind That Bird put together 3 outstanding Triple Crown races.
Well, we talked about, I think I brought that up during Derby week lead up, was that Mind That Bird was the only horse, I think it was 10 years, in the last 10 years, that had finished in the money in all 3 of the Triple Crown races. Any horse, any Derby winner in the last 10 years. I think it was 10 years. Might have been further. But so no, Mind That Bird, you know, he was 50-1 to win the Derby, and you know, got the rail skimming ride and all that stuff, and And but you're 100% right. He was in that run there in that stretch. He was a very competitive horse.
And I, you know, you also bring up one of the, certainly for us, the best crop of horses that this generation got to watch when it came to Street Sense, Hardspun, Curlin, and Rags to Riches, if we want to talk Triple Crown. But it I think it's unfair to characterize Street Sense as Curlin had a longer career, but Street Sense had, you know, had broken barriers as the, you know, the jinx breaker from the, you know, he had a bigger juvenile season than those horses.
Right, and that was my point at the beginning. I meant after the Derby and Preakness, not before. I want to clarify that it was a barometer of things to come, not before. I agree with you. Street Sense, I mean, Street Sense, what, he was the first horse. Was he the first horse ever to do the old?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, okay. Then he went on and had a nice career, and he won a race or two afterwards. But, I mean, obviously Curlin went on and did more things as an older horse than Street Sense did. I could not do before. If you would have taken the before, you'd have to go Street Sense for sure. But but afterwards, Curlin turned into be a, you know, monster.
Yes, as an older I mean, the rest of the year, and as an older horse. And listen, Hardspun, I think people forget it between Hardspun winning the King's Bishop, and I'm going to remind people. There's a few things to remind people of. Street Sense did turn around and win a Travers that summer. And a race that I really should pull up, Hardspun beat Street Sense in the Kentucky Cup Classic at Turfway when that was a big deal in the fall.
Yeah, I think that was an there was another horse in there. There was an unranked race, I believe, but that was a big deal. Well, always got nice horses. That's right.
It might have still been, I think it was still a graded race at that time.
Was it?
I think so. I think the Kentucky Cup would have been September, right? That would have been instead of the Pennsylvania Derby, they went there, if I'm not mistaken.
Whatever happened to that big day? Whatever happened to that big day at Turfway?
Well, you had a couple things happen to that. You know, Churchill went and asked about and inquired and ended up creating that September meet, bringing back a meet they took those dates, and it you know they're in a better position right now financially. We're all waiting now for this, you know, this new management situation at Turfway, and they're gonna I'm gonna assume they're gonna go ahead and build, you know, the historic racing parlor, and, you know, give Turfway the edge that Ellis and Kentucky Downs and Churchill are enjoying. So I don't know how they'll utilize the old Kentucky Cup. They moved it to a different, you know, they were doing some things integrated with Kentucky Downs too, where there were Kentucky Cup races being run at Kentucky Downs, part of it. Yeah, it morphed. It changed.
They pretty much got attacked on all angles, didn't they? They got the Churchill meet, and then Kentucky Downs exploded into a meet of prominence there for that 10-day period. Yeah, so I looked up that race in 2007. It was a four-horse field. Hardspun beat Street Sense. You're right, and it was a grade two at that point. So
yeah.
It took a dive after that, for sure.
But a fun that you know, this is one of the things about the Triple Crown that is fun, and you know, it's funny because Marty brought up some. I asked Marty some of his favorite Preaknesses, and how often have you been here for this? How many Preaknesses have you seen?
I have seen three, and the most memorable, I think the first one we were driving was Unbridled and Summer Squall.
Wow, 90.
So we're going back then, and I was working back then. I think it was Gina's first time out, my wife, in New Jersey, 1990, and we decided we were going to, who won the Derby that year, 90, because I think we went to the Derby, was that Lily T or Unbridled won the Derby. That's right.
90.
So said, that's right. Yeah, yeah. What am I talking about? I just mentioned the horses.
Yeah.
So we go to the Preakness and didn't have any place to stay. And Trevor Denman was calling the races there that week
that,
or
that
something.
One year. Yeah, there was like a special.
That 1 year. So
yeah, 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 yeah.
Trevor got a phone call. And he was kind enough to put us up at his little place there. Was that Cross Keys or something?
Something
like that.
Wow. Cross Keys. So, okay. Yeah.
Is that it?
I think so. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So he put us up, which was great. We wandered over. We didn't have any tickets. We had nothing. So it was hot. It was humid. And it was one of those days, and I was, kind of new on the East Coast, so I didn't really know a whole lot of people. And so I said, look, we're inside. They had everything compartmentalized over there. If you had a blue ticket, you couldn't go into the red section and whatever.
That's right.
So we you couldn't move. And I'm pretty good at moving around, but I'm telling you what, I couldn't beat them. So, and it was one of those things, you're in the grandstand, and if you went outside, down to where the benches were, the little small apron, you couldn't get back in. So it was kind of like, what are we going to do? So we were inside, and I go, okay, this is what we're going to do. Since it's hot and it's humid, screw it. We're going to stake out a place by the paddock so we can watch the horses get saddled, right? So we spend an hour and a half in it, inside paddock, hot, hot, hot. And it's like half hour before the race, and we look up on the TV, and I told Gene, I remember going, I think they saddled in the infield. So we had wasted, all this time just standing. Didn't bet nothing. Didn't want to lose our place. We're a front row seat at the paddock. So we kind of took the short end there. And then like a miracle happened. We're walking around, and I named Mitch Berman, I think. Did you know Mitch?
No, but that name rings a bell.
Anyway. Yeah, you can probably know. Anyway, he's in the TV there, and I don't know how I met the guy at Monmouth or something. It was like, he goes, hey, what are you doing down here? Why don't you come up and watch the race in the press box? And we're like, what? It was like, an angel came down and
touched
the crowd.
You. Touched by an angel.
It was unbelievable. It's like, are you kidding me? We're sweating, go upstairs, and just like watch the race from the up there, and it was really, really cool. And we hung around after the races, and I went up to the booth as Trevor called the last race and kind of let the crowd clear out. And looking down, and I'm telling you, the infield was, I don't think you could see the grass. There was so much, leftover stuck trash and ice chest, everything out there. It was unbelievable. It was a sight. I wish I, had a camera back then that we walked around with to take some pictures. But anyway, so that was the most memorable Preakness for me being there. And I will tell you one thing. I never saw, they talk about the Derby and the infield. I'll tell you what, I never saw more ice chests in my life than going to that Preakness. And they had a lineup. They must have raided the kids in the neighborhood. Must have raided the supermarkets the night before, because there was thousands and thousands of grocery carts there. And as people would be walking up, they would say, they would take the cart, put it in the thing for a buck, and they would wheel it to the front gate for you, so you didn't have to carry it. And they would turn around, and it was just a constant line of these shopping carts just full of the ice chests that they used to let you bring into the infield.
Yep.
And that was much more rowdy and fun, it seemed to me, than I've done both of the infields. But the Preakness infield was live from the morning of the events. But fun time Preakness, and I think I went the year Cherokee Run ran second. I do know that because I had a nice little wager on him. But as I said, Timber Country or something.
I literally am holding in my hand. You say Cherokee Run. I'm holding a picture of him in my hand right this second.
Wow, that's pretty crazy.
It's very funny you say that.
I think he went off at 10-1 that time, and he looked like a winner, and he came up a little short. But, it's kind of a weird for me. The Derby's on the list, and the Belmont, I always like to make the Belmont just because of New York City and like going back there. And so the Preakness kind of has taken a back seat these last few years. So once again, we're taking a little breather, and so we can make a little New York push again this
nice.
Year.
Now, I asked Jimmy if he was joining us today, and he said he hadn't really had a chance to do much. He begged off until we reconvene in New York.
Right. So, but anyway, like I said, it's a good card for both days. You know, I always think about this every year, and it seems like I think there's 7 stakes on Friday, if I'm not mistaken, and 9 on Saturday. And some of the races come up better on Friday than on Saturday. And I always, you know, in my racing secretary mind, try to come up and how do we make sure that Saturday's better. Some of the, you know, I'd like to see him draw stakes on the same day and decide at the draw where we're going to put the races. I know it's, you know, we don't know if we're on Friday or Saturday. But I'm sure that, if, you know, as you look back, you go, ah, there's a couple races on Friday, maybe like a Timlico special this year. We'd probably like to have that on Saturday. Nice 14-horse field as opposed to the sprint. I mean, that's, you know, it's out of the box.
Stuff like that, yeah. That.
But if you took the 6th, I mean, obviously you're going to leave the Black Eyed Susan and the Preakness on those days. They're not going to be switched. But if you took the other 14 stakes, I mean, on the Monday or the Sunday, whenever you draw, and actually the rest of the card too, and it's a lot of work on the one day, but if you get these races put up, you can, you know, obviously you want to make Saturday better. Friday's going to be good no matter what, but you'd like to take the Maryland Sprint. Well, I mean, you know, maybe we could have flip-flopped that with the Preakness Special, and maybe this race we could have flopped with that race, and, you know, ended up with all the, you know, the bigger fields and more competitive races on the Saturday, as opposed to some of them ending up on Friday and they just don't get seen by as many people, and, you know, the wagering is not as affected a little bit. But that, in my little crazy world, that's what things that I think about. But they both came up good.
Yeah, no, you know, the cards are great.
Right, and now you bring about the distance of the Pimlico Special, and they talked to Chris Mers, who they plucked out of our office last year, and he's done a fine job jumping in there and doing that. I thought last time, which has been a while, obviously, since I've been in any kind of the planning stages, but the idea was with the Gold Cup coming up in Santa Anita soon, which, where are we now? We're on the 17th. I think it's next weekend, right? Next Monday? It's either Saturday, Sunday, or Monday of next week. Now, lo and behold, that race is a mile and a quarter as well. So I know there was talk that, hey, let's make the Pimlico Special like a mile and eighth. And so you could, you know, draw some of those ones that wanted to go a mile and a quarter. Maybe they would ship ship and come out for the Gold Cup. Well, so now you have 2 mile and a quarter races a week apart. And so that race out here will be light, which it probably would have been light anyway. But those are some of the things that, you know, need to be thought about in the long term as far as how we run our, you know, our graded races. And obviously the field, it got 14, and, you know, it's just opportunity. The horses, a lot of these horses are on the East Coast. They're not going to maybe ship anyway. 300's good, but there's no stars. And that's it. It's like, wait a minute, you know, there's no superstars in there. Nobody's going off at 3 to 5 in this race. It's close. It's a couple-hour shift, mile and a quarter. Sometimes it's a distance. It's a goofball distance that we don't run often enough during the rest of the year, unless there are these graded-type races. And you know, just half a dozen horses, and they probably haven't tried it or done well at it. You know what? I'm going to take a shot for 300. And it came up, start adding up those tickets with the all button. It gets big, but it's a tough nut to crack. You mentioned Cord Maker in there, and you know what? Not without a shot at all. I look at Flame Away, and I'm not that impressed. The distance might not be well. You look at Tenfold, and you look at his two races against Older. You know, haven't been great. I mean, you can find a hole in a lot of these horses, and every time I look, I ended up on You're to Blame. And here's a horse that's never tried
the second,
distance before.
Yeah, you're the second,
you know,
person,
coming off,
right?
An allowance race, and you know that you're not really thinking about it. Yeah. Well, you know, you got Wait For It in there, who's got a little speed and ran a big race last time. Another allowance type, little he's going to be 30-1. He's going to be a huge price. But this is a type of race that's going to make that gimmick, whether you do threes, fours, or fives, it's really going to, you can cash one in here. You got Heavy Roller. I like Heavy Roller a little bit even. So, you know, you're going to try it in there. This is going to be one of those races where you pick five, you know, pick half the field and then throw the four, you know, pick out, take the ones that you didn't pick and throw them in. You know, having that feeling when you go in and you pick five horses and you know you're not going to win? Doesn't matter. Like,
right.
I got five of the ten and I got the wrong five. And every once in a while I'll do the reverse and it does all right. But this is a wide open bunch and there's a lot of races on these 2 days. They're the same way. So, you know, it'll take a little bit more study. It'll come up with a few gems. But I think was it Nick and Nick always has the some of the right stuff. Put your flag down at some point. You need to find some of these races that you can either single or get down into the ones and twos, or, you know, one or two horses. So you're going to have to spread in some of these. And I think you'll get paid if you hit it. The key is just picking the right
exactly.
race to spread.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Hammer, let me do this. We've got Pete Fornatale and Jonathan Kitchen.
Oh, yes.
And let me pause. We'll come back to you and close out the morning with your Preakness thoughts. All right? But
okay.
Hold on, because I want to get to Jonathan. Pete's doing something really kind of nice. And
no. Traveling
around, Joe, you got to pause. Yeah, take him off, Joe. Yeah, you can't. Who's on the line right now?
Just me.
You got to take Hammer off, Joe. Try it that way. Yeah. That's not going to. No, that happens once in a while to Casey. So it's not. It shouldn't be. That shouldn't be an issue from that end, I don't think. So. If you take Hammer off, then try Pete. See if that makes a difference. All right. There. That sounds a little better. Pete Fornatale. That's Jonathan.
Steve, what's going on?
There he is. There we go. Well done. Good job, Joe. JK, where are you?
I am in New Braunfels, Texas. Very far from Pimlico on the Preakness.
This is not like you at all. This is very unusual. All right, we're going to get Pete and boy, the I can't believe with Marshall here and the entire 10-strike army that you guys aren't riding along with them.
Well. You know, Marshall's got one of his kids running in the Preakness, Warriors Charge.
Right.
I have one of my kids, or only one of my kids. I only have one kid. One kid playing in a soccer game tomorrow. I couldn't miss it. So I'm going to miss for Bell.
Well, all right, we're having trouble with Pete for some reason with that. That's very strange. Yeah, that's something's. Oh, you mean the. Okay, I got you. Well, Joe, your other choice is to drop Hammer for a minute, and yeah, there you go. Exactly. Try that other. Well, she's picked right up on it. Good job, Joanne. Let's do this then, Jonathan. Let me get some opinions from you, and then Pete, we'll try to layer him in as we can. Start with your Preakness approach.
This is a tricky race. You know, I heard Jay Pridman on mention earlier about the tricky part of there being, you know, the top four that cross the finish line first in the Derby aren't here. And that's a puzzle that as handicappers we're not used to, right? We're used to having a couple of horses that ran really good their first time going a mile and a quarter. They're back in 2 weeks, and we can make decisions based on that. And we don't really have that here. And so although I think Improbable is probably the best horse in the race, and I don't think he had a perfect trip, but I think he had a good enough trip that I don't want him at the price he's going to be. You kind of have to look elsewhere for, I refuse to say the word, you know what I'm talking about, right? New shooter, but I'll say it once and I'll never say it again. So, look, I think that a great chance of winning, but I'm going to try to look elsewhere. I think Warrior Charge makes a lot of sense. I was excited about Bourbon War. I'm tired of hearing people picking him, and I'm tired of the price that he'll probably end up being. I'm going to probably just try to spread a little bit, have some stronger opinions earlier in the pick four sequence, pick five sequence, and just try to get alive to the inside five horses. I'm going to try to get alive to War of Will, Warrior's Charge, Bourbon War, Owendale, and am I forgetting somebody?
Improbable.
Three, four, and Improbable, of course. Yeah, I'm going to try to get alive to those horses, and that's kind of my way I'm going to approach this Preakness.
That's interesting, and it's funny you did that, because when I was trying to break horses up into an A group and a C group, I actually noticed that that I had done something similar in terms of the inside horses, and Warrior's Charge is one of those. To me, Warrior's Charge and Bourbon War are kind of an inside-outside. I mean, certain things are going to happen for Warrior's Charge to be able to win up front, and you're going to need a meltdown scenario for Bourbon War, who's become a very fashionable tab here the last couple of days for those that are, that are seeing a lot of pace up front. Pete Fornatale is now with us. Pete, good morning.
Good morning to you, gentlemen, and in Mr. Kinchin's case, I use that term loosely, but I think I can use it in its true meaning with you, Steve.
Well, I appreciate that. And speaking of gentlemanly gestures, you're doing some volunteering today, which is really, really nice.
We're hopefully going to work. We're working on our gambling karma, Steve, and having a good time here at the Chips Soup Kitchen in Brooklyn. This is perfect timing because I'm in between the morning shift where I cut up onions and do the cooking stuff, in the afternoon where I'm actually going to be out there doing the service. So great to get a chance to come on and chat with you guys.
Well, Jonathan just talked about his approach, and it's amazing how many people are kind of taking a wide approach. I really sense, Pete, that nobody has a definitive version of how this race unfolds tomorrow. Earlier James Scully was on, and Scully said there's going to be the pace meltdown, and Bourbon War is going to get to them all late and pick them all off. That was about as definitive as we've gotten. But I don't sense that anyone really feels with any certainty what we're going to see exactly tomorrow.
It's such a difficult race to design, and for me, just not exactly knowing what kind of trip the different main contenders are going to get, and not knowing really fully how to evaluate the horses coming out of the Derby because of how unusual the circumstances are all around. So I sort of second that emotion. It's a tricky one. JK's been saying all week that we've never, in the time that he and I have been in the game, we haven't really seen a Preakness with this many different question marks between not having the top finishers from the Derby, and it's a sloppy track year, and how good are these horses who appear like they're on the upswing, who really wants the distance? All these fun questions make this, I think, one of the most interesting handicapping puzzles of the whole year.
What's your approach? What are you going to bet?
Well, my main bet is JK and I, over on the In the Money Players podcast, made a head-to-head bet, and I've got War of Will against Improbable, so I'm definitely, Warble is not my top pick in the race, but my main route right now is to beat JK in our head-to-head and improve my all-time record in head-to-heads against him to something like 6-175. So that's a big part of what I'm rooting for. By picking the race as Warrior's Charge, I think he might be the best of the speed signed on. I think the distance should just be within his grasp. I think the price will be right. I'm taking, in my general wagering, going to be taking a little bit of a view against the Derby horses, maybe trying to beat them out of the exact even in some small plays and seeing if chaos could ensue. But it's also because of how difficult, as we were just saying, this race is to handicap. It's a year where, obviously always price has to be your determining factor before you reach into your pocket. But this year, more than any, I want to pay close attention to the board and just see if anything crazy is happening in the different pools that we might want to be able to take advantage of. It's possible that the most money I bet on the Derby will be in some configuration I haven't even thought of yet, because there's some anomaly on the tote board based on what I think the prices should be. So I'm trying to stay nimble this year and not get too tied down at the same time.
Interesting, and we're also I think we do want to see how this main track plays as the 2 days unfold. Yeah, Pete, I know you're tight on time. Any other strong leans over the 2 days?
I feel like that late pick four, that greatest pick four, is an excellent spot to get involved. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel, and I think JK agrees with this, that the Dixie narrows down. And so that's a pool I want to get involved in. And I could see you having most of my money put into that all graded stakes late pick four. I love those type of bets. I'm happy to vote for them with my dollar. And I think this sequence lines up well to take a run at that one.
Very good. Pete, I appreciate it. Taking time away, and we'll catch up next week and get some recapping in and start to look forward to New York.
Yeah, maybe we'll be talking to a Preakness betting champion, Jonathan Kinchin, on the segment next Wednesday. Who knows?
How about that? And, of course, that the Express Bet, Santa Anita, Gulfstream, and right here on the betting challenge. And Jonathan's still with us. Jonathan, a couple of other opinions from the weekend from you.
Well, I want to point out Pete's charity, Mother PTF. He's got the soup kitchen. He's consistently donating money to me. He's got the sweet man PTF is, isn't he?
That's great. There you go. All right. Couple others, JK?
Yeah. When we look at the Dixie, I think that there's a lot of horses I think people can kind of get sucked into is, ooh, this horse could win, that horse could win. I think the first thing you have to establish when you're looking at that race is, do you believe in the Henry S. Clark as a prep race? Four runners in this race come out of that race, and if you like it, then you know, you can use some of those. I'm of the opinion that it's not nearly at the level that the horses like Inspector Lindley and Catholic Boy have faced. I know they're drawn to like that. I think it's going to help with the price a little bit, and I think one of those two should get the job done. I think 85% Catholic Boy should be able to beat this field. And Inspector Lindley, I mean, if you look at his PPs and you look at the horses he's been running against, he's been running probably against 5-6 horses in his last 10 to 12 starts that would be odds on in this field. So those are the only two I need in the Dixie.
Very good. All right. What else?
Before that, I don't have the strongest opinion in the sprint race in race 11. I don't have the names in front of me, but I thought that Pyron was the most likely of them. Steve Asmussen and Ricardo Santana obviously can team up together to get you a dirt sprinter. They did the same thing with Mottoli last year.
That's right.
I think he makes a lot of sense. He's got the fast number last time in the slop, and I know that we have to be careful with lightly raced horses, trusting slop figures in control. But I do think that his previous number back in February kind of franks the new number, and I think that he's probably the most likely winner. He's drawn in a good position, and I like my pace a little bit as well. With the kind of shown some versatility with the Charlestown Bull Ring win, also the win back at Fairgrounds. I'm going to build most of my stuff around those two. I guess Preamble can get in, but I'm not overwhelmed by Preamble. He had the fast number back at Keeneland in the fall. But his race last time was a little bit underwhelming from a figure standpoint. But he's one that I'll use a little bit in there. And I guess my strongest opinion in the pick four, and where I'm going to try to make this thing make sense, I'm a little bit spready, obviously, in the Preakness, is I'm going to try to single A Barca. I think that horse is got a profile of a Chad Brown horse that we've seen before, right? French Philly, who is has been competitive in Grade Ones. Peter Brandt, Chad Brown, Irad Ortiz. It looks a little bit like Sister Charlie, our Breeders' Cup filly and their turf winner, and it looks a lot like a freaky filly that we saw a couple weeks ago, or maybe actually 10 days ago in Homerique. And when I was, one of my favorite things to do, especially with Chad, is usually there's an XBTV crew wherever Chad is training, and you can find these fillies or colts or whatever that are working with other talented turf horses on the turf course, and you can evaluate how they work. Barca, I believe on April 21st, worked with Homerique, and I don't really know what I'm looking at. I kind of know what I'm looking at, and she looked to be going better than Homerique. And I know it's a 4 furlong, 5 furlong work, and that's not the same as a mile and 16, mile and a quarter race. However, it does show the talent that she has. She's not going to be 6-1, but I'm going to try to build around her. There's enough other fillies in this race that I think will take money, and I'm going to try to inject some value into this pick four by building tickets around her as a single A, and I'll use all the live ones that everyone else is aware of as kind of backup B types.
Excellent. Jonathan, best of luck in the betting challenge. Always a pleasure, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Congratulations. I'm about to start passing around a petition. The Hilltop Award, I'm happy about that. We got to get a stakes race. Steve Bick claps this. I don't care if it's a turf sprint. We can make it a mile and a half on the dirt. We need a Steve Bick classic. I'm starting the petition. I don't care where it is. Let's do it.
The problem with that usually is you got to be dead. Thank God there's still an just the Eddie D. I can say, well, all right, there's the Eddie D. Somebody that's still alive that they named a stake after. That's usually a postscript distinction.
let's break the mold. Whatever it takes.
Very kind, Jonathan. I appreciate it. Good luck today. Tomorrow we'll talk soon.
Thanks,
you. He's so fun. UT Big Hair, the one and only. Jonathan Kitchen and Pete Fornitzel. And if you didn't hear clearly, he's doing volunteering at a soup kitchen today. He was down here Wednesday, Thursday? Yeah, I think he was down, or Tuesday, Wednesday? Anyway, he was down here, and then he's coming back. So, buzzed down and coming back. And coming back with us for the last 5-6 minutes, Rick Hammerly.
I'm back.
There you go.
Interesting listener. I love those two guys. They're they're pretty fun, and they're good handicappers too. So that's great. And the volunteer thing is a good deal. I've been doing a little bit myself here since I've had some time, and it's very fulfilling. So congrats. Good for Peter to do that.
Very much.
It's always good. Like I said, it's good fulfilling. Good karma too. And one other trend I wanted to print just for the weekend, Todd Fletcher, who sometimes doesn't do as well on Derby Week, he runs a lot of horses on these 2 days traditionally, and his horses are perform well. So keep an eye on him in the various races for the weekend and in your plays. I finally, after all these years, narrowed down what I try to hit the big races and all this. Pick threes, I finally figured out. That's, for me, I'm very comfortable with them, with the multiple stakes and the multiple challenging races. They come one after another. It's manageable for me to, kind of do the rolling pick threes. If you're live here, you can,
yep,
move along. And, I'm not a fan of the 50-cent bet and anything. I think it brings the price down. So I play everything at least a dollar. So at least if you're going to connect. But you get lucky, and if you hit the all button, you can. What that allows you to do is hit an all button, and you get lucky and get a $50 horse in there with a couple other horses. You're going to get paid, and then take a swing at some of the bigger pools that, like Pete mentioned, the pick four, and usually try and hit a pick five every now and then. But for me, the pick threes are manageable. Allows you to go as deep as you want. And then sometimes in those handicap, you come up with a 10-12-1 shot that, you can bet across the board and get cash. But the pick threes are very, very manageable for me. Preakness, hey, I'm not going to say anything that anybody else has. A tough race. I'm going to take the 4 Derby winners blindly. I'm hoping to be live to them. And then trying to come up with that one horse. And you know what? I'm going to give this another twist of fate. His horse has been going the right way. I think it was a blessing that he didn't make the Derby. He got the race in the Lexington, and so it's not like he hasn't run recently. He's fit. He's back. He was back home for a while. He was happy up at Golden Gate Field. I think he has the right style. I think he has enough speed to lay close and track, and it's shown that he likes to run late, and I think maybe this might be a race where you're going to need one going in the right direction down the stretch. A lot of speed in here, but so I'm going to take the 4, the Derby 4, blindly, basically, because they just seem to run better, and another twist of fate is going to be my fifth horse in there, and that's the way I see it, and of course, things may change by the end of Saturday. Depends what kind of shape you're in. If you're looking for a bigger, better price. Black Eyed Susan. I'm going to practice what I preach here. I like the two Pletcher horses. I actually like the two horse a little bit. That comes out the third in the Gazelle Off Topic. Might be a little bit better price. Johnny D, of course, stays on there, and I kind of like him with Always Shopping as well. Brill. I don't know. I don't know. There's something about it. Although the Oakland horses have performed well Derby Day, and they may carry over again, but we'll try and beat Brill and maybe even a little Point of Honor in there too, the lightly raced filly from George Weaver. But you know, you're going to test your thoroughbred thoroughbred handicapping capabilities this weekend, and it's going to be fun. You know, I'm going to be having fun today and tomorrow, so I know you will too. And once again, it's great job on the show. And I'm going to give one more. I'm going to give a book review here, real quick.
Cool.
A goofball book that out of the blue. But you know, I like to read. I like music, and I like to read about music. I just read a fascinating book on Elvis, of all people, called The Last Train to Memphis. And it kind of talks about his life up until he went into the Army, which he did when he was about 22, 23, when he was just getting started. But a fascinating story about, you know, basically the roots of rock and roll and how he came about. And quite a fascinating guy up until that point. So Last Train to Memphis, if you're looking for something to read and you're a closet Elvis fan, which I'm not, but I'm learning to appreciate more. So there you go.
Hammer.
What else?
Thank you. Where are you going to be watching?
I will
going
be
anywhere?
At the I'll be at the Ventura County Fairgrounds, which is a one-hour train ride for me. Luckily, I live about 2 minutes from a train station. And I will get off. You step off the train and you walk over, and the building is the fairgrounds is literally steps from the sand, so you can lay down your stuff, make a bet. Walk out. I usually take a beach chair with me. I'll have a chair on the beach, walk out for a little bit, get a little sun, walk back in. So I will be join some Rays and probably have a Corona or two and enjoy the day of racing on Saturday from that venue.
Have a tremendous time. That sounds very cool. I love it.
It's a good spot.
Rick Amerley, everybody.
Is taking the train. The train.
Oh, yeah. That definitely. The train makes it fun. Awesome. There we go.
And that's it.
All right. Hammer, great weekend. Talk next week, and we will talk Monday, and we will be recapping the weekend. HRRN will take you through the weekend here on Sirius XM. And everything points to a tremendous couple of days. I want to thank Jonathan Kinchin and Pete Fornital, Hammer, Jay Pribman, DeRosa and Scully, Marty McGee, Jim Dunleavy, and Joanne with just an amazing job just under these very difficult circumstances with Casey still hospitalized. And everybody thinking about him this weekend. Let's get him home as soon as possible. We'll hope to get you home. Let's get the horses all home and around safe. And best of luck with however you approach it. I've got to make some minor scratch adjustments to the picks. I'll do that now. And I'll work on the Saturday card, get that written up. As always, love coming down here. And this was a particularly special trip to Baltimore. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you Monday. Good luck.
Let's go killing all.